Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: the Illinois Education Association, Visit Springfield, and PIORG.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
House Democrats in the news this past week, but not for the right reasons. Representative Harry Benton has resigned under pressure, and a longtime lawmaker, Carol Ammons, was named in a federal indictment. We'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is off this week. We have two guests with us, both from Capital News Illinois, reporters Brendan Moore and Hannah Meisel. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
With you.
So let me start with the Carol Ammons case. This broke this week that a federal indictment was issued naming her and also some of her family. She's from Urbana, what has been a pretty safe seat for Democrats. And as I mentioned, that indictment this week changes things a bit as far as what her future is, possibly, in the state legislature. Hannah, you've been covering this. So lay out the case of what the federal government is alleging here.
Yeah, I mean, let's first start with a little bit of history on Carol Ammons. She was an upset vote for former Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan back in 2014. She's been in that seat in Urbana since 2015. And, you know, at this point is, I would say, a veteran lawmaker. She has definitely made waves in her 11 plus years in office. Definitely a very progressive member of the House Democratic Caucus. Her husband is Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons. That was also kind of an upset when he won that seat several years ago. This indictment comes basically a month after the feds indicted their daughter, Tatiana Adam Ammons, in a separate case, alleging she fraudulently obtained COVID-era unemployment benefits. If folks remember, those COVID-era benefits were enhanced about $300 more dollars a week than someone would usually be entitled to. And so this indictment lays out that starting in 2017, Representative Ammons and her daughter enrich themselves to the tune of roughly $100,000 in a variety of ways, including overpayments from Carol Ammons's campaign account to both her daughter and other individuals who are not named in the indictment. According to the feds, that money came back to Representative Ammons in the form of cash kickbacks, and so they would be, you know, kind of untraceable. And then the other way that they allegedly enriched themselves was through state grant money that lawmakers, particularly Democratic lawmakers, are empowered to have, you know, kind of wide authority over some state grant money that goes to nonprofits in their district. So beginning in 2019 for fiscal year 2020, according to the indictment, Representative Ammons directed more than $600,000 to the Hood Vote Neighborhood Transformation, a nonprofit focused on prison reform and services for those reentering the community after serving time in the correctional system. Now, her daughter was already associated with that nonprofit, but eventually rose to become program director. Now, apparently, the Pritzker administration became aware of Tatiana Adam Ammons being paid out of that state grant and stepped in and said, hey, this is an impermissible, this runs afoul of state law. You can't do this. You can't, you know, make decisions for state money that then would benefit you or your close family. And so Hood Vote stopped paying her daughter a salary. But then, according to the indictment, they did this two more times with two other nonprofits. There is a nonprofit called the Bridgewater Sullivan Community Life Center, which is associated with a church in Champaign. Representative Ammons directed basically a more than $600,000 state grant there. And eventually, for about a period of 2 years, her daughter was program director there. I guess no one noticed, even though they're basically running the same thing that had been noticed before, and the state had stepped in. And then they did it one more time with the Independent Media Center in Champaign, where Carol Ammons used to work, according to the indictment. All of this together would be one thing, but then, they basically allegedly deepened their legal troubles when an FBI agent approached Representative Ammons in May of 2024 and asked her about, the conflict of interest, and she denied knowing about it, even though, according to the indictment, she was, quote, well aware, or knew full well it was a conflict of interest for her daughter, because to be paid out of state grants that she had initiated and facilitated, unquote, because she had been talked to about it before by both state officials and officials at Hood Vote. And so she and her husband, Aaron Ammons, are both charged with conspiracy to obstruct justice. And Aaron Ammons himself is charged with obstruction of justice because he allegedly directed, it's unclear from the indictment if it was the same potential witness or three different potential witnesses, but on three separate occasions to basically muddy the waters with the FBI. Also, apparently, wrote down on a note that it was, perfectly legal to have friends pay friends, and then destroyed the note. Didn't say the indictment did not say how he destroyed the note. I definitely, while reading it, had a vision of someone eating the note, but that's just my imagination.
Well, now, Brendan, you talked with the House Speaker, Chris Welch, soon after this indictment became public. I guess, what did he have to say?
First of all, the Speaker put out a statement basically saying that the indictment, the allegations are very serious, and his immediate action was to temporarily remove Representative Ammons from House Democratic Caucus meetings. He stripped her of her committee assignments and from access to the Speaker's office, staff and resources. And Hannah mentioned some of those allegations regarding state funds. So his staff has is undergoing a review of the budget to determine if any of those funds, those grant funds, have to be paused or reconsidered in the current budget. Speaker, a few hours later, was in Springfield. He's not down there very often in the middle of summer, but he was for an event. So we asked him some questions, and we wanted to follow up a little bit about why he decided not. I mean, took some action, but did not ask for her to resign. And the reasoning basically he gave was that he believes in due process, and he believes that that due process should happen in a courtroom, and that anything that they would do in the legislature could be a distraction and it wouldn't be the proper venue. It should be clear, though, that there is a mechanism for due process in the legislature. They have in the House rules, any three members can sign a statement basically saying, we want to form a special investigating committee. And then automatically, there would be a process that would start that would look into if there was any wrongdoing by a member. And if they find probable cause, then another 12-member special select committee would be formed, and they would kind of do a trial of some of the allegations. And then they find wrongdoing, they would recommend punishment for that member, which can include, censure. Could also include expulsion potentially. So that is a process that could happen. The Speaker said that he is not going to initiate it. House Minority Leader Tony Maccombe said that a process should be initiated, but none of she nor none of her other Republican colleagues have done that to this point. And we're talking on Friday. Perhaps by the time we get around to next week, that will have started. But it's clear that the Speaker and Senate President Don Harmon has kind of been on this wavelength too, that in terms of dealing with the bad behavior of members, especially when it's a criminal indictment involved, that it should play out in the courts, that they would rather not have a trial-like process take place in the legislature. They will go as far as say, we'll strip you of your committees, maybe we'll bar you from caucus meetings, but that's about it. And and it's fascinating though, because it is a little, Welch has been pretty consistent on this. He remembered, although he did sign, I think it was back in 2019 when former state rep Luis Arroyo was indicted on bribery charges. He was one of three members who did sign a petition starting a special investigative committee. Obviously, Representative Arroyo resigned before that could get started. But then, when Speaker Madigan, there was a special committee to investigate Speaker Madigan ahead about alleged wrongdoing in his dealings with ComEd. Speaker Welch chaired that special investigative committee, and he, along with the two other Democrats on that committee, decided, voted to not proceed. That, in his statement, basically said that he believed that it was kind of a kangaroo court, that the courts are really the place for such things to take place. But then again, that's a little bit different than what happened with Representative Harry Benton, who a little bit different, wasn't a criminal case, but the speaker did eventually ask for him to resign after receiving a report from the legislative inspector general, which I think we will get into. But yes, in terms of criminal cases, the speaker kind of laid out his thinking that we'll let the courts decide this. We're going to give our members due process.
Yeah, I mean, Brendan, you mentioned Senate President Don Harmon's approach, to kind of let the courts handle it. I mean, I last spring covered the trial of Senator Emil Jones, of course, the son of former Senate President Emil Jones. He was charged with a variety of things, including bribery and obstruction of justice, lying to the FBI. But the jury in that case, deadlocked and couldn't decide. And ultimately, the case was dismissed when he entered into a deferred prosecution agreement. And, coming up on, I want to say it's early December, he'll be basically free and clear of that unless, something else comes up in the next, I don't know, 5, 6 months. But I also want to say that as we're taping this in the 10 o'clock hour of Friday, July 10th, the Champaign News Gazette has published a statement from Carol Ammons. Basically, she says, quote, "I want to be clear, I have done nothing wrong, and I strongly disagree with the allegations outlined in this indictment. I have complete confidence that the facts will demonstrate my innocence, and I intend to vigorously defend myself through the judicial process. Because this matter is now before the courts, I will not litigate the facts through the media. I have great respect for our judicial system, and I am confident the legal process will provide the appropriate forum for the truth to be established." Looks like she's not backing down. She is not resigning. She says, quote, "I remain committed to serving the people of this district with integrity and transparency while this process moves forward. I ask for patience as the legal process unfolds. I remain confident that the facts will ultimately speak for themselves." If she goes through this whole process while retaining her seat, it's not unprecedented. It is rare, though. I mean, the difference between Emil Jones and Carol Ammons is that state senators only have to run every 4 years, and she's up for re-election every 2 years. But of course, since that is such a safe seat, like you mentioned at the outset, Sean, she doesn't have a challenger, and she's probably, like, barring anything super weird, will be reelected. But it does kind of affect, while you are serving with a legal cloud over your head, particularly a criminal federal indictment, it's not an easy road.
We'll be back with more on State Week in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
We're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Hannah Meisel and Brendan Moore, both with Capital News Illinois. And Brendan, at the start of the week, the bigger news was the fact that Harry Benton, a Plainfield Democratic state representative, he was under pressure to get out of office, to resign, get off the ballot. This came from the Speaker, Chris Welch, and it's been something that's been building for several months. He finally did announce he's stepping down, but fill us in on what is, you know, what's happened here over the last several months.
Yeah, Sean, this has really been a big mystery. In late February, Harry Benton, who's the state rep from Plainfield, southwest suburb of Chicago, honestly one of the swingiest House districts in the state, was kind of with no public explanation removed from the House Democratic Caucus, booted from his committees, and really we had months of silence from Speaker Welch on this, and really the only thing that you know outlets including ours were able to confirm was that there was an allegation of sexual harassment made against Representative Benton, and that there was a complaint filed with the Legislative Inspector General, and that the Speaker was not commenting out of deference to that process and letting it play out. Well, last week, Legislative Inspector General Mike McCuskey delivered his report to to Speaker Welch on Harry Benton. And according to Speaker Welch, that report outlined behavior that he described as outrageous, unethical, and unbecoming of a member of the Illinois House of Representatives, and basically said that the representative had to resign or he would initiate expulsion proceedings against him. And then 2 days later, Representative Benton did resign and said that he plans to withdraw his name from the ballot in November. As of Friday, he has not done so yet, but that's expected to happen soon. So, but again, to be clear, the allegations that were made aside just from a generic, it was sexual harassment, are not widely known. We haven't seen the contents of this report. We're kind of just going on Speaker Welch's word at this point, and you know the fact that Representative Benton resigned in short order, you know, is perhaps an indication that you know he, unlike Representative Ammons, was unwilling to fight this. And in his statement, Representative Benton said that he wanted his family's privacy to be respected. And there were some questions about whether this report would be made public since Representative Benton did resign. And that remains an open question. So basically, there is a process outlined in statute. So the LIG gave his report to the Speaker. The Speaker, within a day, provided his response to the LIG, basically outlining the ways that the punishment or the discipline that he imposed as a result of the report. And now the LIG has 30 days to basically report to the Legislative Ethics Commission to determine, basically say, okay, the Speaker made all the recommendations, he adequately responded, this case is closed, or he didn't make the recommendations that I requested, and this should go further, we should get the Attorney General involved, and, you know, basically keep the case open. It's viewed as unlikely that will happen, that especially with Representative Benton resigning, that this case is probably going to be closed. Now, to be clear, the Legislative Ethics Commission, which is a person body made up of equal amounts of Republicans and Democrats, equal amounts of House members and Senate members, they have full jurisdiction here to decide whether or not to release this report in its entirety with redactions or not at all. And so they meet later this month, July 23rd, I believe is the date. And it is not yet certain what actions they will take on this matter. But I do know that there is a clamoring for some transparency, because I think a lot of people, folks that work in the Capitol, staff and lobbyists, and people that would interact with Representative Benton, not to mention his constituents back at home, have just kind of been left in the dark throughout, not really able to discern kind of what he was accused of and how bad it was. Obviously, there's a and the speaker has brought this up repeatedly, that they had to be respectful of the process and also respectful of the privacy of the folks that filed complaints. But also, I mean, there is a bit of a clamoring for some transparency, because again, unlike Representative Ammons, as Hannah said, I mean, she's going to win re-election in all likelihood pretty easily. It's a very safe Democratic district. She doesn't have an opponent, whereas Harry Benton did have an opponent, and he would have had a very tough re-election even without the allegations. So this is a tough seat, and while he's gone, I think people are really wanting to know what the heck happened, and how and whether the response is adequate. And we really can't tell that until we actually see, some more details that would probably only be outlined in this report.
All right. Well, we'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.
And you're listening to State Week. Hannah Meisel, fill us in real quickly. There was another ruling this week when it comes to Illinois' assault weapons ban, but this is not the last we're going to hear about it.
Yeah, definitely not the last we're going to hear about it, especially because the U.S. Supreme Court just last week agreed to take up a similar assault weapons ban law in Cook County and Connecticut. But this is now the third time the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled to keep the law in place, but the first time that it actually ruled on its merits. A very interesting ruling. Judge Amy St. Eve, who was nominated by President Trump during his first term, wrote the opinion and was joined by Judge Frank Easterbrook, a former chief judge of the Seventh Circuit, himself appointed by Ronald Reagan back in, I think, 1985. Because of the 2022 pretty much landmark case out of New York, the Bruen case, where the conservative majority of the court basically laid out a new sort of understanding for how to look at particularly Second Amendment cases, saying, any sort of modern gun control law has to fit in with, comport with the historical tradition of firearm regulation. Now, in 2024, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that federal law prohibiting people who has an active domestic violence order against them, can't own firearms. The 8-1 majority ruled that that was perfectly legal and comported with, that history and tradition of firearm regulations. And in this majority opinion, the 2-1 opinion, Thursday rather, this appellate panel compares assault weapons to Bowie knives, which in the 1830s, 40s, 50s were a pretty deadly weapon. This is, if for those who are not familiar, I certainly was not, a pretty large sheath knife, very, very deadly weapon at its time. And the majority compared legislatures, outright banning Bowie knives, banning the sale, banning possession of them, to modern day ban of assault weapons, and they said that legislatures have throughout American history looked at weapons, and for assault weapons in particular, this law came 6 months after the deadly mass shooting at the Highland Park Independence Day parade in July of 2022. Again, this is not the final word on Illinois' assault weapons ban, and probably within a year, the US Supreme Court will deliver its kind of final say, and we'll see what happens then.
All right, time now for our notes from the field, and Brendan, we'll go to you first.
Maybe some closure on the Y Block saga in downtown Springfield, something that's spanned more than a decade, three mayoral administrations, three gubernatorial administrations. But the vacant lot that fronts the Illinois governor's mansion may be getting a makeover in the form of a park. The state has already allocated $4 million. To help build that park, which would include an amphitheater. Basically, the city of Springfield, which bought the land from the state for $1.5 million using TIF money about a decade ago, is going to be gifting it back to the state. So we may finally see some action on that. Anybody that's been out to those Levitt Amp concerts on Thursdays in the summer knows that it's a pretty nice place to take in a show.
All right, and Hannah.
Yeah, so out in Maine, folks might be following the news of Graham Plattner dropping out of the U.S. Senate race there after allegations of sexual assault from a former girlfriend, following all kinds of allegations that kind of rock the campaign. And one of the top contenders to replace him on the ballot would be Nirav Shah, who was Bruce Rauner's former public health director, but he did not necessarily have a smooth exit from Illinois because he was largely believed to be responsible for the Legionnaires outbreak handling at the Quincy Veterans Home back in 2015 that killed more than a dozen residents of that veterans home. And, we've seen folks speaking up about, how Nirav Shah cannot replace him on the ballot, including Illinois Senator Christina Castro, a veteran herself, who now chairs the Senate's Executive Committee, so pretty high up in the Senate. She said on social media this week, 14 veterans lost their lives at the Quincy Veterans Home due to his negligence and incompetence. He was more concerned about his image and that of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. He's unfit to be the governor of Maine and is unfit to be its U.S. Senate candidate. It'll be interesting to see who ultimately replaces Graham Plattner on the ballot and whether it is Nirav Shah if he gets close. Democrats there are planning a convention.
All right, well, we'll continue to follow that. That's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel today included a pair of Capital News Illinois reporters, Hannah Meisel and Brendan Moore. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.